diplomacy with the Rukola in terms of today's program. We are supposed to have also the Minister of the Union in the Presidency appearing before the Minister. Unfortunately, because of today's program in NA, they are unable to be with us. We have to reschedule another date where there will be afforded an opportunity to come and do appearance before the Select Committee. In terms of the program, we have introduction, which is going to be our next item. Then we have also briefing by DPSA on the budget board. We'll have also a deliberation then in Victoria, which is going to be our last item. Well, I'm told the Deputy Minister will be joining us. We'll really appreciate the Select Committee. May I take this opportunity then to start by introducing ourselves. My name is Jihad Mohati. I'm the chairperson of the Select Committee of OCTA, Public Relations Admin, Union, Youth and Intergovernmental Relations. In that sequence, I'll ask honorable members to introduce themselves.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to everybody. My name is Freddie Sowana, member of the committee. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Martin Chetty from Delegate KZN.
Good morning. My name is Dumis Antlindi, permanent delegate from Western Cape, member of this committee.
Right. In a like I can not lambra to that. The Malelo Qua committee
Okay, for the officials that are working with our committee, can I just ask them to rise up for acknowledgement by the House? Can you give them a round of applause? You are all welcome. Can I then ask the DG to lead in terms of introduction of their members or either side? Any other questions on the side who will introduce the delegation to the side?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, morning, Honorable Members. Our Deputy Minister for Public Administration is here with us, the Honorable Ian Dabodo. I don't know if he perhaps wanted to say a word or two before I introduce the team and go into the presentation. Thank you, Deputy Minister. The team that is joining me today, the team of Deputy Director General, from the department, Colette Flack, the Deputy DG, is responsible for policy research and analysis. And Jajiro Sebo is our Deputy DG, who looks after Office of the Government Chief Information Officer, the Bureau of ICT in the public service. Next to him is Dr. Alex Mahabo, who is the Deputy DG responsible for service delivery improvement. Right in front here is Kenny Govender, Deputy DG responsible for government. And next to the Kenny Govender is Dr. Nelly Dwaba, who is our acting DG responsible for corporate services. We're joined by another official of the Chief Financial Officer, Marcelo Mahura, sitting here next to me. Emmanuel Masha, right behind me, he has interacted with office quite a lot, the parliamentary liaison. And our other support staff, Linda Shangere, responsible for strategic management, office of the DG, as well as Shamila and Kuling. Without wasting any further time, honorable members, I will go into the presentation. Firstly, just to apologize for the late circulation of the presentation. We'll go into detail in the presentation so that we explain the content both in terms of the performance for 2014-15 as well as the strategic plan and the annual operation plan for 2015-16. The presentation, as I indicated, will focus on firstly our annual overview of our performance for the financial year 2014-15, I must indicate that this is performance as based on our report. But annually what happens is that after we've concluded our report, the performance information then gets audited by the Auditor General as part of the preparations for the release of the annual report that gets tabled in Parliament around August, September. So what we're presenting here is an audit process, because the audit process by the Auditor General is still taking place. What we have done is we have taken the report to our internal audit, so that at least it's not just the report based on what managers say, but our internal audit can also look at it. The audit is using their own tools to verify the accuracy of the performance report. But the final audit report will be available once the Auditor General has completed their work. The presentation will also focus on our strategic plan for the 2015-2020 period and our annual operational plan for 2015-2016. What the 2015-2016 annual operation plan does is to take the plans for the year and break it down into quarterly milestones. We will also talk about our budget allocations for this medium-term expenditure framework and also for the 2015-2016 financial year. We just also indicate in the presentation that the plan and annual operation plan that we are presenting today was tabled in Parliament in March earlier this year. On our overview of performance 2014-15, we go straight into Program 2, but just to indicate that Program 1, which is administration, there's a large chunk of administration focused on compliance work, like timely submission of reports to National Treasury, timely submission of reports for audit purposes to the Auditor General. And so we have complied with those requirements, and just to say that in terms of our own audit requirements, for the years preceding this one, we once again got an qualified audit, and although the audit for 14-15 has not been completed as yet, we are expecting another qualified audit for the 2014-15 financial year. Program 2, what we do here is we also have built into our progress report the issues that the Auditor General had raised previously about performance in the public service, which requires our attention. One of the issues that was raised, which relates to Program 2 but applies to the public service as a whole, was the fact that the vacancy rates in the public service were rather high. And what we did as a department was to assess the kind of challenges in the public service that lead to a high vacancy rate in departments. And some of the issues that departments have shared with us are the ones we reflect in the slide. One of the things they indicated is that there is ongoing restructuring that continues for over a long period in departments. As long as there is restructuring taking place, posts are kept vacant pending the finalization of the restructuring process, and they say this ends up negatively affecting the period to fill vacancies in the public service. The second issue that was raised by departments was the moratoria that were placed for sensitive periods in some of the departments. They gave examples here of the provinces of the Western Cape, Crusade, and Mpumalanga and Gauteng, where there was a moratorium placed on the filling of posts, which then extended the period of finalizing the filling of the posts. And then another issue that was raised in terms of our observations is the issue of insufficient delegations to fill posts, which means that if there aren't delegations given to management, for example, to fill posts, everything else then has to be escalated upward for appointment of the panel or interviews to take place for the approval of the appointments themselves, which ends up taking long. A further issue that was raised was the issue of vetting of employees in terms of the requirements for the qualifications to be verified by the South African Qualifications Authority, as well as the security agency vetting requirements. Now, what have we done to assist in addressing some of these issues? One of the things we have done is we said we will continue to monitor the time it takes for departments to fill the post. And in doing so, we produce this monthly report where we make recommendations to cabinet on how these gaps can be closed. So these areas that have been raised up there as concerns in our latest report to cabinet, we actually raised specific recommendations that can assist to close these gaps. Our last report looked at the period up to December 2014. And in that report, it shows that the average vacancy rate as at the end of December 2014 was 14.16%. And the median period fill post is about just over five months. If you look at the post fill between October 2014 and December 2014, our target here is that it should exceed 6 months. We think also we condemn the issue of high number of active positions in the public service. We work with departments on a one-on-one basis. Those departments are particularly challenging in this area, where we support, guide, and encourage them to make sure that they are able to address this measure. On the measure regarding a lack of delegations that then continue to prolong the time it takes to fill vacancies, we have developed a standardized delegation principles and template so that each department doesn't have to start from scratch when they start to think about delegation. They can simply use that framework, that template, and then conclude the finalization of delegation much more quickly. We have had a directive that was issued around this area, and as you will see later in the report, a lot of our focus now is to work with departments to help them use that template to develop their own delegation. Some of the workshops started already in 2014-15 financial year, but we continue to have those kinds of workshops during 2015-16 as well. Final work that we did in the area of human resource management and development is around the issue of reasonable accommodation and assistive devices. This is a matter that was raised in the past. One of the challenges we have in the public service around the recruitment and retention of employees with disabilities is around the conducive environment in the public service once they have been appointed. And what this area deals with is facilitating the issue of ensuring that there is reasonable accommodation in departments and that the employees with disabilities are provided with necessary assistive devices for public service. Apart from creating a policy framework, we also worked very closely with departments this last year and also with associations representing people with disabilities to find out what the progress is that has been made and the recommendations that they have. We have produced very important notes. After developing a policy and procedure of sexual harassment in the public service, which was approved, the focus was during 2014-15 on supporting departments to implement that policy. A further issue that was raised in previous findings by the research panel around the public service generally was that of contributing to what a capable public service and building the skills on an ongoing basis for public service, and it's an issue also in the National Development Plan. I think what we flag here in the main is that we have come up with a directive which was approved by Cabinet on compulsory capacity development, which also mentions the number of mandatory training days for public servants, so that each department will ensure that the public servants, in this case senior managers, undergo training for a certain number of days as a minimum. And in addition to that, we have all our ongoing work around the use of competence-based assessment, which is one of the areas that we use in the public service to inform personal development, so that when SMS members have gone through competency assessment, the areas of weakness, the areas of development that have been identified can inform the personal development plans of the public service. We've developed policy on employee health and wellness, and every year we take a chunk of departments, national and provincial, that we support in the implementation of those policies. And for the financial year 2014-15, we worked with 25% of the departments that needed our support in this area. Program 3, which is labor relations and remuneration management, when Resolution 1 of 2012 was signed, 2012, in addition to dealing with salary increases, it dealt with a number of other elements that needed follow-up. These elements included the signing of service charters, for example, with organized labor. It dealt with the development of government employees housing scheme, which we dealt with later within the presentation. So the issue during the 2014-15 financial year was to make sure that we address those other outstanding issues from Resolution 1 of 2012, and those were dealt with. A further issue that has to be dealt with, because the Resolution 1 of 2012 came to an end in March 2016. So in 2014-15, we had to start a process of negotiating a new agreement with organized labor, which will then take effect from the 1st of April 2015. And what we needed to do was to secure a mandate from cabinet to direct negotiation process. That was done. The negotiations started in September last year, and we believe that the stage where we are now, we're moving towards the last phase of the negotiation process with organized labor. A further commitment that we made last year was to support departments to expedite the finalization of disciplinary cases. In this area, the focus was on creating centralized capacity which can then be assigned to support those departments which are struggling with the handling of disciplinary cases. We started with, as a priority, those employees who are placed on disciplinary suspension because of the cost implications which are required for the state, and we'll speak a little bit more about that. So in this slide, the approach we took was to go to cabinet and ask that we create a centralized pool that will be coordinated by DPSA, where we'll have internal experts. By internal experts, we mean people who are skilled in the area of disability management, labor relations, and legal services, who are already employees in the public service, who we can then assign to different cases and say, assist me this one, assist me this one, and so on. Following the approval by cabinet of the establishment of this pool, the response from departments when we approach them has been very encouraging. At this stage, we have approximately 200 officials that departments have designated to assist us in this process so that we can then begin to assign cases to them. The actual handling of the cases is part of the 2015 Government Chief Information Officer Program 4. A critical issue that was raised there by the Auditor General previously was the development of promotion of IT security in the public service, as we increasingly adopt IT in the delivery of services and in our government arrangements in administration. We have to strengthen security arrangements towards the use of IT. So what has happened here in terms of what the ATA rate, we have looked around to see what departments have performed very well in this area. We have classified the performance of those departments, and we have agreed with them that we will use the lessons from their good practices and use them to shape guidelines that we are going to develop for the public service as part of the system financial year, but also to promote an exchange of experiences between these departments that have performed well and those that are struggling in this area. We also conducted a review on government spending in the procurement of ICT and related within the public service. One of the critical things that we need on an ongoing basis to make sure that there is very for money in the procurement of ICT in the public service. So we continue to monitor this, produce a report in this area with the specific recommendations on the areas that require improvement. I think the ICT governance framework, that members might know, that it was a concern raised by the Auditor General in the past, that there isn't a framework for ICT governance in the public service, which can support sound ICT governance departments, but who the AG can also use when they monitor audit ICT governance departments. That framework was developed and approved by Cabinet in 2013, but we're just flagging it here because focusing then in the rollout of the program support to department around the implementation of that framework. And program 4 continued, I faced the issue of good practices on IT security, but we've also had a project focusing on analyzing bandwidth uptime into social service centers, so that not only do we try to promote connectivity of the centers, but that once they have been connected, that the uptime is available, that people can be able to access the online information that is required. And this is an area there where we monitor the performance of the school service centers. We focus on 56 centers during the course of the 2014-15 financial year. And then, of course, the work that we're doing now around the development of an e-government strategy for the participants. Program 5, the disability and organizational performance. An issue that was raised by the Minister for Public Service and Administration, Mr. Chabane, last year in his budget vote was that we have to ensure a greater focus on frontline staff. And he committed himself that during 2014-15 there will be greater interaction with frontline public, that between September and November they will actually be interaction with frontline public staff. This happened, and I know that some of the members of this committee joined us during the business that we had to interact with members with frontline public servants, where we got a lot of useful ideas on the actual experiences of public servants who are located at the interface of service delivery. They've made recommendations to us on how they believe we can improve the way we work as government and the way they work as public government. Those recommendations continue to be used to inform our interaction with the departments that are concerned, because the recommendation they made was specific to the departments. When we talk to them, they would say in the Department of Labor we are concerned about this, in the South African Social Security Agency we are concerned about this, in the Department of Health we are concerned about this, and so on. So those did take place. There was also a commitment to recognize hardworking public servants by hosting the National Battlefield Excellence Award. Those awards were held in November 2014 as part of our initiative to recognize public servants. Last year also during the budget vote, the minister talked about work that will be done around the establishment of new departments. After the general elections last year, there was an announcement made by the president around the reorganization of the departments at the national level. So a task team was put together by DPSA in collaboration with the president, national treasury, and the Department of Public Works to focus on facilitating the establishment of the new department, and that work was completed. We also made a commitment around assessing the accessibility of Tucson service centers in the country, and the work around the that accessibility study also commenced. We focused on a problem within this regard, and the report was produced. Just to indicate that this kind of report informs further rollout work on Tucson service centers, so that the Tucson service centers, the new ones that get established, they are guided by a certain set of norms that say in terms of how far they should be from members of the public that are going back to them. There can be certain norms that can guide the location of the children's services. Just the last two bullets here really deal with something that was raised previously by the Auditor General, that one of the weaknesses in departments is the lack of standard accuracy. In order to support departments in this regard, we develop guidelines on standard operating procedures which departments can use and tools that departments can use to set their own standard operating procedures. In addition to developing those tools and those guidelines, we have continued to work with samples of departments to assist them to put those tools to practice so that they can have their own standard operating procedures. A new area for us during 2014-15 following the establishment of a new grant from research and analysis in the department. We focus on the development of research protocol as well as instruments and measures and tools to measure efficiency in public administration. The issue there is to leverage research in public service to make sure that it informs policy development, it informs implementation, and it contributes towards improving efficiency. So the DPSA going forward plays a very critical coordinating role. So, so that the research agenda for public service can be shaped from a coordinated perspective. We have instruments that we use on functionality assessment. This is one of the popular instruments where we go into a department and we assess the functionality using the set of the team. And then we give a report to the other department in the MEC to say, this is how you fare in terms of the functionality of the department. These are the gaps, these are our recommendations. So we did that in the office of the female in the pre-state. We've done that in the Department of Social Development in the Popo. By and large, we receive requests to respond to those requests. But there are a number of cases where we identify the department ourselves and proactively go in to apply the instrument. Another new area of work that we identified during 2014 was to get to grips with the issue of productivity system. And the focus here was on developing an instrument to measure productivity in the public service. That instrument was developed and we have been able to pilot the instrument in the Department of Health in the Northwest. So the idea here now is to be able to roll out and further departments that are included in the application of this instrument. So it will help departments to measure efficiency, to measure effectiveness of the output against what employees are being paid. As indicated in the slides there, we conducted further pilots in the Northern Cape, Western Cape, Kwazulu Natal, Malanga, and the Gauteng province in 2015 financial year. Program 6, Critical Governance and International Relations. A major area of work here has been around the Public Administration Management Act. The Act, as the committee know, was signed into law by the President in December 2014. And what we have been doing since has been to focus on a process of preparing for implementation. A number of the areas contained in the Act to require regulation to support implementation. And so the process of preparing for development of regulations has started, and as you see in the 2016 annual application that they reflect on this as a big area of focus for us. During this operation, the committee would know that there is a requirement for senior managers in the public service to disclose their financial interest. The arrangement at the moment is that those disclosures are made manually. There is a form that they have to complete, which they then submit to the executive authority, who will then sign off and submit to the Public Service Commission for filing. That those forms get scrutinized to see if there are areas of concern about the integrity of the public servant, the senior manager in question. We have introduced an electronic disclosure system to make the disclosure process much quicker and much convenient for senior managers. During this last financial year, we encouraged the department to use the e-disclosure system as opposed to the manual one. Although it was not really mandatory at the time, because the mandatory part was still the manual system. We're quite happy with the uptake of departments. There are many, many departments that actually use the e-disclosure system, even if it was not mandatory at the time. And we believe this all as well for the implementation of the system. Later in the presentation, we'll see how we see ourselves taking this forward. In terms of amending the public service regulation so that it can now be mandatory for us to use the e-disclosure system. Even the current cycle, SMS members were expected to close by the end of April. We'll continue to encourage them to use the e-disclosure system because it makes it easier for them to use the system, but makes also the issue of scrutiny of the disclosure much easier because you can go online and see, if you compare what the system says against what the company's register says, are there discrepancies between what the cabinet number says and as opposed to use money. And you're also able to compare that against the bank register without seeing that money. So we hope once again that when we report later in the year to the committee on how many SMS members have disclosed that we see the numbers using the disclosed. We just reflected also on bilateral multilateral forums where the department continues to play a role representing the Republic of South Africa in the area of public administration, where we share lessons and experiences with our counterparts in other parts of the continent in the world. Governance and international relations continue with program 6. One of the training arrangements we've been having over the years was around the training of a group of anti-corruption practitioners every year. So we take a corpus every year. It's about 200, I think, Kenny, Dr. Mahama, that we continue to add every year so that over time we will have a big number of public servants who have been trained as anti-corruption practitioners and are able to conduct the investigation. So today, the number is, as I say, in the slide, just under 800 officials that have been trained. We went to Cabinet previously to seek approval for a public service integrity management framework. The management framework deals with a number of gaps that have been identified before on the promotion of integrity in the public service. One of those gaps has been the management of keys, for example. So the framework that deals with the three provisions on how we can strengthen the area of the management of keys in the public service. The framework also deals with the important matter of prohibiting public servants from doing business with the state. So that was approved by Cabinet, but we are raising it here in this presentation because the focus was more on working with departments to assist them around the implementation of the framework and also identify areas where we need to develop further guidelines for departments to assist with the implementation process. The next few slides focus on the targets that we were not able to achieve. The first one looks at the discipline management procedure. Here we're looking at the one that was specific for the Department of Public Services Administration. There's a disciplinary code and procedure for the public service as a whole, which all other departments use. But just as we encourage other departments to tailor the code for their own use in their own department, we have committed ourselves to doing that for the TSA, but we couldn't conclude it. What we continue to do was use the public use wide one to deal with discipline management in the public service. But we also said we would do was to make sure that we produce ongoing reports from our communication section, which tried to highlight the department's performance during the current administration. Now, although our communication team continue to do their work and communication campaigns and so on and so on, what was missing in this case was just to consider those issues in the report, because this is what we have been to do as a campaign for the year under review. We also committed ourselves to reviewing the public service HRD strategy framework, which was not completed. We had to have further consultations with a range of role players in the public service, but we couldn't conclude all this within the current, within the financial year that we are reporting on. We monitor the submission of service delivery improvement plans by departments. They submitted to TSA, we give comments, feedback on the content and the quality of the plan. We have committed ourselves that at the end of the financial year, apart from receiving this plan and giving feedback to departments, we have a consolidated report which we then can submit to say this is the work that we have done around monitoring the submission of the digital improvement plan. That report already has been completed now, it's going to be completed during the financial year under review. Also, we committed ourselves to compiling a report on an assessment of service delivery sites in the health sector, what happens every year during public service month, we deploy senior managers to various areas of public delivery. And we use a certain tool as part of a program called the GAELU, which we run in collaboration with the National School of Government. And they get certain tools that they can use when they go on site to assess the performance of the public delivery institution. So the commitment was that once they've gone into this area, the focus will be on the health sector. They will then submit their individual reports. We will consolidate those individual reports into a consolidated report. The deployment to the health entities happens. The personnel managers generate their report. We then develop a consolidated report, but the report could not be completed within the financial year of 2014-2015. Another one that we say was not completed was actually partially achieved, because we said that we will take the citizen support card findings. We did a survey on the citizen satisfaction level of elected citizen delivery sites, and we said we will take those for circulate them to municipalities, national departments, and so on. But we were only able to disseminate to 11 municipalities and one national department. So there were five other national departments that we could not complete the process of sharing the report. The approach was not just to sign the report, but was organized for an audience in each of those departments so that we could have findings. So that could not be achieved. We also had committed ourselves to laying ground for the second generation review of South Africa under the auspices of the African peer review mechanism. Members of the committee might know that after the adoption of the mechanism by South Africa, we went through a review by our peers, the continent, where they used the instrument to assess governance across the range of indicators that's contained in the African peer review mechanism. After that review was done and the report was produced, we then developed a national implementation plan to address the recommendations that were made by the review team, the independent review team. The next step was to report to the African heads of state, those states that are involved in the African peer review, on the progress we are making against the action plan. So we submitted all the reports, we have completed them, but what we had then said was it's time that we start preparing for a second list by the panel of eminent persons. During the course of the 14-15 financial year, we said that we were going to start the processes to prepare to lay the ground for the second review. There were delays in the interactions and consultations that we were going to have with the National General Council. The NGC is the governance structure for the APRK in South Africa. So when we develop a project plan, we then go to the NGC, the National Governing Council of the APRN, for approval. Because of the delay in the finalization of the consultation, that deliverable is effective as has not achieved. That is in terms of our progress against the 2014-15 annual operational plan, which, as I indicated, is still the subject of the approval by the Auditor General. With your commission chair, I will then move into the plan and annual operational plan for 2015-16. I think just on this slide to emphasize that we are guided primarily here by the National Development Plan, and we indicate in the slide that follows that the interventions that we come up with are linked directly to specific focus areas in the National Development Plan, particularly facilitating of the National Development Plan, which talks about the realization of an efficient, effective, and development-oriented public service. The next slide just describes the process that we follow, what all other departments follow when they develop develop the plan. We presented to the portfolio committee in September, made my goal to the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation for analysis. You get feedback from them, then you refine until you then submit finally to the Minister for Table in Parliament, which is what happened in March of 2015. We just reflect here very briefly on the mandate of the department. Firstly, that we draw our mandate from Chapter 10 of the Constitution, which deals with the values and principles that govern public administration, but the development oriented, that ensure the efficient economic use of resources, that it can be representative of the people of Africa and so on. So that's the one area in terms of our mandate. The second part is the Public Service Act itself, which talk about the responsibilities of the Minister of Public Service and Administration. And that does reflect the kinds of things that the Act requires of the Minister of Public Service and Administration to deal with. And we just reflect therefore that as we talk about our activities, and the activities are again, firstly what the Public Service Act says, secondly against what the subsection of the Constitution says, and then thirdly against what the National Development Plan says. We also on this slide just highlight some of the challenges that the National Development Plan raises, which we are required to address. The overall challenge being raised unevenness in the capacity of the public system. And the National Development Plan says these are some of the factors that are responsible to which this unevenness can be attributed to. Thirdly, intentions in the political administrative interface, the interface between political, the executive, and the administration and departments, that there is instability at the level of administrative leadership, that there are skills deficits, insufficient attention to the issue of reproducing the skills, the state needs, erosion of accountability, poor organizational design, laws and so on. So by and large, in the activities that we included in our annual operational plan and the stress plan, they also try to respond to the issues that are reflected here. The goals that we have in our strategic plan, as you can see, are drawn directly from the National Development Plan. So the strategic goal one is about the creation of a stable political and administrative interface. Goal number two is the creation of a public service that is a career of choice. Goal number three is around ensuring that there is sufficient technical, especially professional skills. So later on, when we talk about our activity, let's speak to these goals that are listed here. Efficient and effective management and operation systems, goal number four. Goal number five, around strengthening government systems so that they can deliver them for money, although we don't do work in this area directly ourselves, but we monitor this as part of our coordination of our contracts. Where we look at all other departments that have specific responsibilities, in this case with National Treasury that is coordinating them. So we monitor how they are performing in this area and then we report according to goal. Strategic goal eight on increased responsibility of public servants. Strategic goal seven on improved interdepartmental coordination. It's a project that is driven by the presidency, but it's one of those that we monitor as one of our roles in the coordination of outcome trials. And then strategic goal eight on improved mechanisms to promote ethical behavior in the public service. So those are the goals that are outlined in our strategic plan for this medium-term expenditure period. 2015-16 annual operation plan implicates those and break them down into annual targets and quarterly targets against which we can be monitored. The departments, we use those to report to the executive authority, we use those to report to Parliament, we use those to report to our audit committee and department and our regular reports to National Treasury and the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation. We start with Program 1, which is administration. A number of the things under Program 1 are really administrative things which, if not attended to, would impact on the audit document that the AG will issue. So they relate to the submission of financial statements to National Treasury. They relate to the submission of annual financial statements to National Treasury. The submission of the annual report 2014-15 to the AG so that they can verify not only our financials, but also the performance information, the progress report that we use. So they are basically gains that must be adhered to, and we just reflect them so that they don't fall under the blind spot of monitoring process. Quarterly reports submitted to the National Treasury, work on risk management and audit, internal audit process in the department, all these are internal administration things which must be in place and must be adhered to because they are the key dates around which they must be submitted. there must be a submission of quarterly report on our communication campaigns to our internal expo. We have committed ourselves to developing internal ICT security within CPSA, which we must finalize and approve. And then perhaps a critical area here, which is not limited to CPSA, but is for the public service as a whole, is the public service regulation. After the Public Service Act was amended in 2007, the public service regulations themselves were not amended. So there are certain areas in the current public service regulations which have fallen behind in terms of alignment with the Public Service Act, Amendment Act. So there will be a new focus during the course of 2015-16 around the revision to the public service regulations. There will be revised will then be submitted to the minister so that they can be sent out for public comment and then finalization. And so that is the one area. And just to give an example in this area, I spoke about the e-disclosure. The regulations will speak to the manual disclosure. So until we revise the regulation and make mandatory for disclosure to happen through the e-disclosure system, the e-disclosure system will remain voluntary. So that is just one of the areas. But there are other areas in the regulation that will be revised. Secondly, we spoke earlier about the Public Administration Management Act, which was signed by the President in December 2014. I indicated that a number of areas in the Act would require supporting regulation for them to be implemented. So our commitment for the 2015-16 financial year around the revision of the public service regulation and the development of the regulation to support the implementation of the 10 Act. The second program is policy research and analysis. Apart from developing the regulation, there's a huge chunk of work that will need to be done on the provisions of the Act themselves and the policy implications thereof. It's a huge intervention that has been put on the table here around the implementation of the Public Administration Management Act. And our policy research and analysis branch is assisting in the process of facilitating ongoing and phased implementation of the provisions of the PEM Act during the course of 2015-16 financial year. We have also committed ourselves this year to look at the issue of gender. The committee might be aware that the model, the government model used for student service centers, they are inconsistent with the model. There are different approaches that are used around the management of student service centers at the moment. Some of them will find that the center manager is an employee of the office of the premier. In other cases, the office manager is actually an employee of an NGO. And in one that we are managing ourselves directly, the Mabuna Mall student service center in Soweto, as the manager of the center is free of the children. So the issue has been how do we make sure that we ensure consistency in this arrangement so that we have a much more consistent model of governance that deals with all the issues that relate to the function of the center in terms of governance. So we have our commitment to make sure that we find out our research and study during the course of the financial year. Now, we talked about the accessibility of the school center, the accessibility study that we are conducting. Work on accessibility studies is one of the ongoing things that remains on our website. So on an ongoing basis, we continue to look at certain areas where we should conduct accessibility studies, because the accessibility studies help us advance on the accessibility norms that must then be accepted and adopted. Those are the specific services that we'll be looking at during the 2015-16 financial year. The Public Administration and Management Act, I'm talking about the critical area here is to ensure that there are norms and standards that can apply across national, provincial, and local administrations. So what we'll be doing is to look at what are the norms and standards that exist across the district and just check their data before we say these are the gaps that need to be closed and the equipment that needs to be accepted. I think about the policy on reasonable accommodation and assisted devices. It will remain on our web plan for purposes of monitoring and advising on areas of improvement to ensure that the department will improve in the recruitment and retention of people with disabilities. I thought also about the work that we've done on productivity measurements, that we piloted this instrument in the Northwest Province. So through the course of 2015, we will take this forward and run this productivity measurement instrument in FERA departments so that we move towards a position where the instrument can be refined, where necessary the instrument can be refined, and the instrument can be rolled out to the rest of the world. Also, when I was talking about 2015 performance, I spoke about the research protocol and the work that we are doing to strengthen the research program of the public service. We will take that work forward in 2015 financially with the necessary guidelines and with the necessary tools that we need to for that purpose. I spoke earlier on about vacancy rates in the public service. We believe that this should not fall off our plan as yet, but we should continue to monitor the vacancy rates in the public service and continue to make recommendations to cabinet on where the gaps are that need to be closed. The strategic goal 2 in the NDP I indicated was on creating a public service that is a career of choice. One of the things we'll be doing here is to have a public service graduate recruitment scheme, which is mentioned in Chapter 8 of the National Development Plan as well. So for 2016, we'll take that work forward on developing the model and consulting on that model that can be tested for implementation in the public service. Also, there is an expectation as part of improving, promoting the public service as a career of choice of working with our young people. We have an existing arrangement at the moment where we encourage public service as a whole to make sure that collectively they employ, appoint at least 3,000 in their leadership, retention, and assistance programs. Annually, we submit reports on how many youth have been appointed into these programs, and in fact, what we're beginning to monitor now also is how many of those, after completion of the 12-month extension period, get adopted in the department. So, obviously, we will not be possible to absorb all of them all the time, but as part of investing in the young people, but also creating some basic capacity for the public service, we are quite pleased that a number of them get retained after the 12 months of the public service. We spoke about the issue of disciplinary cases in the public service. We'll be monitoring how departments are performing in this area, but not only monitoring, we'll be using that tool, that internal tool that I spoke about, to assign access to particular departments, so where are these in this department, why are these in that department, because they need to be valued in terms of the progress they are making around the resolution of disciplinary cases. Legal relations and human resource management, we have making a commitment here to do research on the remuneration framework for the public service as part of the processes of managing the wage bill in the public service. We make sure that because we enter into resolutions with organized labor in the PSBC, that we have to, on an ongoing basis, monitor the implementation of those resolutions. One of the issues actually raised during the interaction that we had with public servants during September, October, November last year was exactly this area, that they are concerned that these resolutions get reached, but some departments do not implement them the way they were intended. And the recommendation was GPLM must ensure tighter monitoring of the implementation of this resolution in all the departments. And then, of course, we spoke about the government employee housing. This is still part of the package that we trying to finalize with organized labor as part of this round of negotiation and anticipating that it will be accepted. We'll be monitoring and reporting on the implementation of the scheme. We require under Program 4 to facilitate the use of IT to enable the delivery. So what we have been asked to do in the first plan, we say we are identifying five private services which can benefit from the use of IT. But for this year only, we say let's take three, and we will interact with departments either education, health, social development, and then say to them, let's look at the services that you provide, which ones can be provided in a much faster, efficient way, if they see in any economic the assessment that I presented earlier on when you were talking about the findings of the AG was around security guidelines, that work will continue in the 2016 financial year. And we also are intending to leverage the chief information officers of departments to ensure greater impact on the strategic objectives of the department in which they work. Because we believe that as opposed to just waiting for a process coordinated by DPLA on e-enablement, there are IT officers in this department. And if we pull these IT officers together and work very closely with them, they can themselves become very proactive in their own department. Because they are much closer to the strategic objectives of their department than we are to make sure that we use IT much better to improve the achievement of the strategic objectives of their department. The issue of leveraging the fine market, we said that we continue to monitor IT costs, procurement costs in the public service, so that we can expand the economies of scale. That's what we continue to do in 2016. In the 14-16 report, I spoke about the tools we have developed on standard operating procedures that we have available to departments. We believe that we still have to continue with deepening our support to departments to use those tools to have in place the effective standard operating procedures. And then the work on revitalization of Batupin. We will do that. We spoke about federal delivery improvement plans. And what we will have to do here is to make sure that departments continue to develop this plan, submit them on time, that they get feedback from us on the quality of those plans. In fact, what we targeting to do in 2016 is to even go further and say, let's take faster of departments. Each department should not necessarily always start from scratch when we develop service standards. And this is the experience we are taking from the development of generic organizational structures with departments, where we said education department involvement is definitely a generic organizational structure that others can use themselves, as opposed to starting from scratch all the time. So we're saying here with service standards, we can then use the same approach, where we say, in terms of the provision of health, for example, under the generic service standards that all health entities should have. Obviously, they will have to adapt them to their contextual peculiarities and geographic specificities where necessary. But at least they will have a generic set that they can start with, because our sense is that one of the areas in which departments struggle when they come to development of service improvement plans. They battle with the service standards themselves. And then, of course, the African peer review mechanism. When the president was reporting to his counterpart at the forum of heads of state involved in the African peer review mechanism earlier this year, he indicated that South Africa will soon go back to the forum and indicate its readiness to be assessed just so that the state can be determined. So we have put that again on our 15-16 annual operation plan, because every department we are responsible for coordinating the preparatory work that is necessary for the review to take place. I also indicated earlier on that we have developed a standardized delegation for departments, so that when it comes to delegating level of authority from the executive authority to the head of department to other officials in the department, they have a framework that they can use instead of starting from fresh. We started with a number of workshops that we're running in provinces and international departments to support them to implement the framework. We believe that we have to continue with that process during 2016, because at the end of the day, we will be much happier to see departments and effective delegations that they have been able to put in place. We are also committing ourselves to developing a framework for mentorship among senior managers in the public service. The concern that was raised in the past was that you have senior managers, they get employed when they exit for the public service, that knowledge is lost to the public service. And if we can have a process that is put in place to ensure that there is effective mentoring and peer support among senior managers, that will contribute towards the sustainable capacity in the public service. I mentioned in the progress report for 2014-15 that we have developed a directive on compulsory capacity development, where public servants will have to undergo training for a certain mandatory number of days per annum. During 2015-16, we will monitor the implementation of that directive so that we can achieve this objective. One of the concerns in the NDP, there was the issue of instability at the level of administrative leadership. So what we are doing as part of our interventions, we monitor the average time that the head of department takes in the public room. And as part of our report to cabinet, the quota learning report that we submit as part of our 12, we report on the average time it takes. Because it raised as a concern in the past that there's a very high turnover rate at that level of coaches leadership. Still with government and administration, I think towards promoting an ethical public service, we talk about the electronic admission system. And here the main focus now from implementing the system is to make sure that the public use regulations are under there, so that now the use of the electronic system can be made mandatory as opposed to the voluntary arrangement we have at the moment. And then also, of course, that provision around prohibiting public servants from doing them with the date. We are required to make sure that our support to departments is much more coordinated, so we have been requested to develop a strategy that we can use and roll out in terms of the support mechanisms that we have for departments in these areas of human resource development and management, organizational development, and we put that into place. But just to confirm that support continues to take place at the moment. On an ongoing basis, departments come to us and say, help us with organizational structure. Help us with the interpretation of the following policies. Help us with the functionality assessment. All this kind of work continues to happen in the meantime. Finally, the chair, with the allocation, the medium-term expenditure framework budget allocation. I should indicate that the allocations here are for the vote, which includes other entities, not just the GPSA. So when we see the vote for the MTEF, to say 2.9 billion, it's actually for the entire queue and all the entities that's for within this vote. Specifically for the 15-16 financial year, the total vote is 930.8 million. Again, it's for DPSA and all the other entities within the vote. This just elaborates on the appropriation for the framework period, the breakdown for 15-16, the total allocation 930 million. For 16-17, right there, the bottom 978 million, and then rising to just over a billion for 2017-18. Now, if you look up to the middle of the slide where it says the PSA budget allocation, it shows the portion of the allocation that goes to our department. For 16-16 is 446 million. That then goes up to 466 during 16-17 and to 492 million during 2017-18. What is listed underneath that is the allocation that then gets transferred to the other entities. The first one is the Center for Public Service Innovation. I should add that in the past, the Center for Public Service Innovation was within our program structure. They were not receiving a transfer. Now, one of the issues that was raised in the past, the AG also raised this, was that we should move to a situation where this center sends them that they can get a transfer from us, they can generate their own set of financial statements, and they can generate their own annual report, as opposed to being kept within the office of the Department of Public Service Administration. So we start from the 15th financial year. They are now on their own getting the transfer, like the other entities that are reflected today. So, 29 million for the Center for Public Service Innovation, 19 million for the PCTA, the Public Sector Education and Training Authority, 139 million for the National School of Government, and 222 million for the Public Service Commission. And the rest of the slide just shows what goes into the outer year 2016-17 and 2018. The next slide takes this around and just shows in pie chart form the percentage of the split. You see the gray part there shows PSC Public Service Commission gets 24% of the split. The National School of Government gets 15%. Public Sector Education Training Authority gets 10%, and so on and so on. And then the remaining ones are those for the Department for Public Service Administration, where we show the split according to the various programs in the department. We should also indicate to the committee that during this medium-term expenditure period, they were compulsory cuts that were imposed on all votes. In our case, our vote had to cut 34.5 million for 15-16. So we are 34.5 million poorer in 15-16. 15-17 we are 40.2 million poorer. 17-18 will be 44.2 million poorer. And what we do there is just in case of split in terms of where the cuts will come from. The highest cut will come from TTSA in 2015-16 is 30 million cut, 30.4 million cut. The National School of Government is a 4 million cut. The Public Service Commission was lucky for 15-16, there is no imposed cut on them. But as you go to 16-17, we all get the cut, including the School of Government. And the Public Service Innovation, so the Public Service Commission. But that just shows the split in terms of the cuts that have been imposed on our vote. What we have also done is, having realized that the Center for Public Service Innovation is now going on its own, and it needs to have a strong corporate service capacity, we then reprioritize within our budget as well, so that we can assign to them a bit of money that they can then use as part of building in their own corporate service capacity. So there is an amount there of 2 million in 2016, rising to 2.5, and then 3 million in 2018, which then gets us to what the Center for Public Service Innovation to help them strengthen their corporate service capacity. Some of the entities within the vote were also lucky that they got interest, EPMI, Center for Public Service Innovation got an increase 4 million in year 1, rising to 5 million in year 2, and 5.9 million in year 3. ECTA was the largest beneficiary, getting an increase of 58 million in year 1, rising to 71 million in year 2, and 75 million in year 3. And the Public Service Commission as well benefited 11 million in year 1, rising to 12 million in year 3. 8.3 million in year 3. Unfortunately, we are one of the departments that can be treated. We take the figures for 15-16 years and just split them according to economic classification to show how much goes to compensation of employees for the vote as a whole, and how much goes to goods and services, how much goes to transfer and subsidies, how much goes to machinery and equipment. So you can see 277.8 million for compensation of employees. Year 165.3 million for goods and services, 485.3 million for transfers and subsidies, and for machinery and equipment for 2.8 million. The outer year are reflected there for 2017 and 2018. We often get asked the question how much of your budget gets used for consultants. So we have done the calculation here to reflect for 2015-16 how much of the budget goes to consultants. And you see, in terms of the 2015-16 calculation there, it's 13.9 million rising to 14.2 million in 2017, and then going down to 12.1 million in 2018. These are the figures that that the CFO grants the region at least, because there is a percentage of plus minus at 8%, which is not going to exceed that 8% ceiling in terms of the amount of percentage still that goes to the consultants in the country. Honorable Chairperson, that is our presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. A round of applause for the DU. General Michalakas, a round of applause for the DU.
Thank you very much.
Honourable members, can I take this opportunity to welcome honourable members that arrived while the DU was already in the process of presenting? May I acknowledge Honourable Michalakas from the Free State, sitting down there. And I also acknowledge Honorable Julius from Hampton, and also the Whip of the Committee, or just before the Whip of the Committee, Honorable Musanga from Mpumalanga. And I also welcome you, and also welcome the Whip of the Committee, Honorable Louis Mande from KZN. And I also welcome Hansi, Honorable Manupole, are you still with us? Can I also welcome Honorable Manopule, who's also from the, she's from Northern Cape. Can I also acknowledge with gratitude, in our midst we have the Deputy Minister, and I think you are more than welcome, Deputy Minister. I think it's an honor to us, especially for us pursuing our oversight of the executive, and where many people are perceiving that the executive is not only accountable. By your presence here, bring that knowledge, and I think you deserve a round of applause. Thank you very much. Our members, I think we're going to interact, but before that, can I come from the side of DG, whether there's fair input either from the Deputy Minister or any other person before we can engage with the presentation. Hello, Deputy Minister.
Thank you, Sir President.
May I understand?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think it's not always that we come to account before a select committee. And the opportunity that we have is very, very welcome, because we take it that we are accountable to both the National Council of Provinces and also the National Assembly. I just wanted to bring to attention of the House that some of the work that we do as a department also depends on how it is that other departments implement rules, policy, norms and standards. But some of the kind of things we need also to be saying to ourselves, how does it gauge ourselves on the temperature and the mood of the election? How do people feel about it? And especially because this has been declared the year of the Freedom Charter. It documents that all of us, are or favored, but also have accepted that as the tool that developed the Constitution, the National Development Plan, that informed all of those documents. I just think we need to be more accountable to our people and listen and be more attentive to the voices of our people, so that in the development of strategy, that gets informed by what our people feel and how they experience us. We are talking about ethics, for instance. And every time that we speak of ethics, it's always based on doing business with the state or disclosure. Now, the issue of ethics is about honesty, it's about being virtuous, it's about many other things that go beyond just the rent and cents as they come into the individual's pocket. It goes to how the state itself managing those outcomes that relate to a civil service that has ethics. There's a problem that we have of a backlog in disciplinary cases. Some of the time it is because the managers are unable to deal with issues of discipline, the issue of grievances, people who do not come to work but are paid for not coming. So all of those issues where we are responsible as a state in assuring that we uphold and assist our employees and make sure that the issue of ethics becomes foremost in the way that they behave, what we need to be looking at as a government. Are we sufficient in managing all of these areas that relate to ethics and not just financial disclosure and issues relating to doing or not doing things with the state? Performance management, for instance, is one of the big areas that I always speak about in the department. That the management of performance remains a huge problem in the public sector. There are managers that are teaching that have not, performance has not been appraised over 2 to 3 years, some I think even more, which is problematic. How then do you determine whether or not that individual is getting paid for the work that he or she is expected to be paid? We have issues relating to training and development on matters that have been agreed upon in the Public Service Parliament Council. The issue of induction. Do we report that both to Parliament and also to the executive when we report upon issues in person? If there are new appointments, do we actually say how many of those people have gone through the compulsory or the mandatory induction? And how have they been assimilated into either the good practices or the bad practices within the public service? So all I'm just saying to the person is that I think the select committee also needs to take an interest on those areas where we will be taking shortcuts, on those areas where, because you are the people that talk to people on the ground, on those areas that are raised by our people, and how that gets translated into improving the way that we do things at the public.
Thank you very much, Honorable.
Thank you.
Deputy Minister. I think your presentation is also welcome. Honourable members, I think it's now time for us to interact with the presentation. You just indicate by a show of hand if you have any interest to engage and interact with the presentation. Honourable members, and I note Honourable Timbi, Honourable Mkanga, Honourable Manopole, Honourable Julius, Honourable Wana, Honourable Chalajan for the first round. Need that sequence.
Yeah, thank you very much, sir. Sir, let me welcome the this presentation for the committee. Sir, I think this is a good thing. I am responsible. You know, if you are the time to read this document, you can have a lot of questions. But at the time, he answered a lot of questions at the beginning. For example, this ongoing chapter over a long time, but my question is why so long to intervene? Because also at the end, it's sweeping the group services. And the second, you answer the moratorium that were in place. Ronald was particularly that is unpaid by the problem. And I think your intervention, civil intervention, will be more important than this because we'll compromise it with the service and the opposition is capitalizing about this, but I'm happy that the call for those moratorium is also coming from the Western Cape and other provinces. And I think that your intervention in this is important. Thank you for thank you very much for all for the your trying to put this to some center in addressing it. I was worried about this thing. When you go on this side, you don't know whether it's municipality or that means it's some center. You don't know whether it's national or provincial. But it is here. You need to. Well, I remember. So we think that a program is 2015, one of those things. Both of me and my friends and parents, my request to you for the department.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Attention. I will also echo the very same sentiments to say we applaud and appreciate the presentation. But, Chair, I'm having one question, perhaps it will be controversial or question. The question is all around the issues of corruption.
instances wherein we invoke section 109B or C in any municipalities, you find that there will be administrators imposing a progress to the municipality, or there will be even a CFO impose. But during the period of the intervention, a CFO will
so, can I ask that you approach the mic like a co-star?
During the intervention, you find that the CFO will therefore resign. And after he has resigned, you get that 230 million going to your account at home. What measures do we as a department to avoid that? Because since these people let us go away with the thing, they know that I will be infecting the municipality, steal money from there, I will resign, there will be no criminal cases or followers to recover that money. What are measures do we have as a department to avoid that or to ensure we don't face these challenges anymore? Thank you.
Next, Honorable
Colors. Honorable Chairperson, I did not have my hand up for a question.
Oh, Honorable Malopole, then it would be the next one.
Thank you, Chair. I don't know if I can be a pop star, but I personally welcome the report, Chair, and also the layout, particularly giving us the briefing with regards to the process of last financial year. And maybe if I start first my bias to enrich what the question that Honorable Mushanga has. With regards to legality process of the official, the relationship between yourself and the national treasurer, particularly to the official who has been found in the case of corrupt and indigenous, because sometimes they move from, they walk from one body to another. They cannot be traced. And I just want to check whether how far it is. I want to raise my question under Program 3. Program 3, particularly with the issue of improving of condition of service for public service. This matter of monitoring of the government employees' housing scheme, it is to a day last year, it is here again, to develop a public monitor and report program. When are we going to get the implementation? It's been long. It's been shifted from 1 year to another. Every financial year, the infrastructure is the target, but gender not the project progress. I'm reading this because of the interest of analyzing this letter. Particularly that we have the challenge of housing overhaul. Housing settlement is dealing with the issue. The challenge that the workers have are in bracket. Between hard-broken and place. So they cannot afford some bonds, and again, we don't qualify for the housing, the RDP housing. So this matter is to us going to address the gap that the workers are confronted with. So we to me, that the way they've been put on the target is not sufficient. And then overall, the issue of OSD, we read it with you this last year. And then I don't see in the progress, also in the strike place, particularly the negative impact on other departments. Last year, the different departments came when they presented to us in this committee. They also raised the frustration, especially financial justice and correctional service. The challenge that it has a negative impact and also positive impact, but to us, the impression that they've been created by those departments is that the negative impact is more than the positive. So I'm asking if, why is it not in the frustration? So the department is supposed to make analysis to with taking forward. How are you going to address, because it seems that this policy has not yielded the results, the positive results that the intended department has raised. So it's not there, that's why you should have to clarify how, why is it not there, and when are you going to address it. Thank you, Chief.
That was Julius. Thank you, Chairperson. So to say that, thank you, Honorable Deputy Minister, for your presence also here. But I hope that we can in future engage more with this department, because
it seems as if this department you only come to the select committee when you need something. You come with a mandatory thing here, and you need more engagement from this. The second thing is only budget. Only budget. I'm sure we can do something in that regard from our side also. But DG has no position. For all myself, we do not capitalize. We hold departments to account, Deputy Minister. the governing party should also do the same, I believe. But we are a committee, and that's our job. We do not capitalize. We hold to account. Honorable Mslanga, and you're not controversial. You must ask questions. Someone didn't send you yet to keep quiet. But my questions, DG, do you know how many senior managers are currently on precautionary suspension and still getting paid, obviously, in departments? Secondly, what are the reasons for the delay of service delivery improvement plans from departments? Are there any reasons given for that? And then in terms of access to the citizens report card, where can we find this? We have access to it. I've never seen it, unfortunately, but maybe because we never meet, that's why we don't know what is happening in the department. But the citizens report card, where can we access it, please? Thank you, Chair.
Another one.
Thank you, Chair. Let me thank the input from the Deputy Minister and the Chief. My question is, first and foremost, how far are the negotiations with the public service? How far is it gone? And what percentage are units envisaging to accept? Secondly, in terms of there are percentage in each and every issue that is calculated. Why is the allowance in the South African police is always 400? Or is 400 data allowance? Yeah. There's no increase, there's nothing. And what is the percentage of women in the top management of this department? What is the percentage? And the disabled in top management. If I would have a platform to discuss more, I would propose that performance management must be phased out because it is costing the state and the corporate. Secondly, Chairperson, when you go to Chairperson, in page 17 of the strategic plan 2015 to 2020, page 17, there's a line that confuses me or divides my thinking, where the department is saying are also experiencing difficulty disciplining administrative officers. Mm-hmm. My question is, that means the people who are employed in those positions got no capacity, because there should be a code of conduct. Whoever is employed within the department has that code of conduct. So whoever is an executive can execute the discipline and administrative the need to do that. Maybe I will have the clarity on that. Certainly, I appreciate what has been the overview performance.
Trying to assist people that are capturing. This is the 6 point that we are looking for. Then it's us, it's not like I'm going to interrupt you. Six, no one, no problem.
Okay, I'll come again then.
Okay. No, thank you. For the department to respond, even when I was doing counting, specifically to make the honorable member to realize that you are putting more, then it will make it more difficult for the department to respond quite quickly. Can I then afford the department to respond? Then we'll have the second round, which is going to be the last round for posing questions. Honorable Deputy Minister.
Chairperson, I think part, well, I know, my input on performance management is something that I, as a public representative, would agree. In fact, I don't think we're managing performance in a manner that is expected of us as public representatives. And I can say even parliamentarians, we just don't do our work effectively in management of performance of the administration. And it's a bit saddening to hear that some of us would believe that performance management is a waste of resources. If anything, we should be putting more money into performance management so that we ensure that the performance of the administration in general yields the type of results and meets the aspiration so that we can be able to meet the aspiration of that people. I just thought I needed to tackle this because I did raise the issue of performance management, but maybe I misunderstood what the Honourable Member was saying when she said that it's a waste of resources both for the public sector and for the private sector. I, as a public representative, would never align myself with a statement like that because we owe it to our people to account for money that comes in the form of taxes, but also on the commitments that we make to our people every time we go for election.
Honourable, you've encountered an opportunity for you want to clarify your position. Can I ask the honourable member to clarify before we conclude on this specific law?
The proposal I was saying, this issue needs to be revisited and discussed. Why I'm saying to the face, our assistant municipalities, the top executive of the municipalities will grant themselves performance bonuses. And the municipality will go for disclaimer for 7 years. That's point number one. Point number two, when I said this issue of performance management must be revisited. I was working for Eastern Cape Development Corporation. And there I was registered. And every day we were told that our corporation is not meeting the standards of the audit. We have got disclaimers. Because the top executive of my own company was always giving themselves performance.
So that is where you have got in the
and that's why I said it's wasted. Because the institution itself cannot make the disclaimer. And the institution is going down because each and every certain period towards the close of the company, the top management will give the bonuses.
I think your point is taken. In fact, Honorable Deputy Minister, I think the point is really spread out. And in this case, the monitoring system, how do they ensure that they're able to monitor even where people are accumulating bonuses? Let it be thoroughly monitored. Because if you compare the bonus against the output, particularly around the results in transported outcomes, you will always find municipality underperforming by bonuses being paid. So I'm saying it's okay being in that regard. But if it is in that context, then I think it's well understood. They would afford the department an opportunity maybe to have on further their view, particularly on that particular matter, if they so wish. Can I also place it on our in case the department on our DG, you feel that you still have to come back on other questions that were posed, you are more than welcome to do that way, so that you don't sit here and commit yourself for issues that will be measured in future. Remember, part of this engagement is to ensure that we are going to ensure that there's continuous oversight. I think one of our viewers was really required to say to it that we don't need really to interact only during the project vote exercises or processes. We must ensure that we do have programs where we come together. And I think can I afford the department an opportunity to respond?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. As part of managing performance and promoting accountability, I'm going to ask some of the DDGs as well to speak to issues that relate to their respective areas of work. I'll start with the DDG policy research and analysis colleague, and then there are issues that she will be able to speak to, and then others relating to stream management, lifting and so on, will be dealt with as well. Can govern that Dr. Mahapa, the issues of LCIP that will be made there, and then we'll then see how we conduct it.
Sorry about that. In terms of responding to, I think Honourable Member Okanga was making reference to Section 100 rather than Section 109. Yeah. We currently are not involved directly with the issue of interventions with municipalities. But under the aspects of the, when certain aspects of the Performance Administration Management Act have been brought into effect, there would be a process between the Minister for Public Service and Administration and the Minister of COPSA to plot the way forward in relation to the strategies around particular interventions, both in government departments as well as in municipalities. But I think the substantive issue you were speaking to was more about the appointment of people that have been found to be corrupt and they resign. More, I think there was strictly an input from yourself and Honourable Member Monopola about the same issue. Since the Public Service Act as it stands with the amendments in 2007, whether you moved from a department where you were still in the process of being dealt with in terms of the disciplinary procedure, the new department that you moved to is obliged to conclude that disciplinary inquiry, irrespective of whether it's a national department or provincial department. With the Northern Standards as they evolve, that would then become what we call contemporaneously consistent also with municipalities, because the Personnel Administrative Act has an applicable provision for transfers and deployments between NGOs of government once those particular portions have been brought into effect. And that hasn't been brought into effect yet, because there is still another legal process in terms of the regulations around the norms and standards. Just to deal with the Honourable Wana had wanted an update on this, the data for women. As of the 31st of March 2015, the last data for women in management in the public service was at 40%, and for persons with disability, we are sitting at 0.55%, which we are under the desired 2%. And that is throughout the public service. But of the 153 departments, only 29 departments have reached the actual target of 2% for persons with disabilities. And the presentation can be done to the House in relation to the constraints and the strategies that have been put in place to address that. But to also link it to Honourable Wana's comments around the performance management, from a research perspective, the productivity measurement instrument is a separate instrument from the performance management instrument, where the performance management instrument, which has been measuring efficiencies around inputs and outputs, have created problems, whether it's in the private sector, whether it's in the public sector. And the research is showing, if you do not have another instrument that is measuring productivity, that measures the effectiveness and the impact of the outcomes that the Honourable Deputy Minister is speaking to, those two have to be put together. The one that measures service quantity and the one that measures service quality. So you must be rewarding quality and not rewarding quantity. And when you have got a measurement instrument that is combining the two, then you can actually justify when you are giving rewards for the quality of the impact of the actual service. So at this point in time, those would be ones that I would be focusing on insofar as they respond to the policy and research area. Thank you.
Thank you. Through you, Chairperson. I'd like Dr. Mahaba to speak to the issues of the deliver improvement plans and the citizens' catch report that the Honourable Julius asked about.
Thank you, Chair. coming to SEIP, which we call it the Service Delivery Improvement Plan, I think the question was asked to say, what does it take a long time to intervene? Because that is an intervention strategy that the department developed in order to talk with the other department to say a way to improve. So now the first thing that you need to do is to identify the business processes maybe within that department to say what are they expected to do, and also be able to set the start operating procedure within the department. And then after that, you should be able to have your own service delivery model. Within the service delivery model, what you are going to monitor is as to whether are they implementing what they say they're going to implement. So fair to do that, where there's a lot of complaint out of what you're asking, the student scorecard survey, is then that the department will be able to get in ourselves as DPSA to say, let's sit down and look at what are the problems. Can you select two targets that raise concern among the community to say you will be able, they will be able to select them. And then out of that, we'll be able to do what we call service delivery improvement plan. We as DPA will be able to monitor that. As the DDS indicated, previously we were monitoring compliance to say the department is submitting the service delivery improvement plan. But now we are getting deeper into monitoring the quality of the service delivery improvement plan. If you said, I've reached two targets, we are just going to monitor whether it is real that you have managed. But those are intervention strategies to make sure that if the communities are complaining on the service delivery, what are the issues that you need to address? I can give an example to say, let's say people are saying, in Home Affairs, we were taking a month to get an ID. And then we ask the question, what is the strategy in case of improving our service delivery? It says it's this queue management system, which will make it quick, and then within 2 weeks you will be able to get your ID. And then how do you do it? They say we send an SMS, report each and every time that after 2 weeks you will get your ID. When the ID is finalized, come and get your ID. How long do you take to finalize your issue of the taxes? So now those are the things that they will be able to include into your plan to say this is how we are going to do to speed up our service delivery improvement plan. Did you on the citizen scorecards, I didn't hear, what was the issue?
It was just a matter of information, where to access it.
Okay, so on the citizen scorecard survey, is that what happened is that the DPS, we go to the users most of the time just to get the information as to, are you satisfied about the service that you get within the department? And then we'll be able to develop methodology, and then after that do a research, get a questionnaire, and also get to face-to-face submit. And then that indication will be able to get the results as to whether what are the problems that they encounter. Is it a sanitation? Is it whatever it might be? From there, we'll be able to develop an action plan for that department to say these are the areas that the communities are complaining about. And then this is how you should be able to address the issue. And we'll be able to monitor that action plan in case of the department to say, have you done these things? The waiting time for the patient, let's say at Calafo, we've done the citizen scorecard at Calafo. The way what we call the satisfaction or what we call survey also. We've got also employee satisfaction survey, which is different from the what you call the citizen. So now from there is then that we'll be able to indicate to say, this is what we need to do to be able to improve on the service delivery. But from our side, it means on the PSA website, you'll be able to get that information on the documentation to say how far have we gone. So that in case of the delay, the DG indicated that we thought we'll finalize all the provinces, but we only managed to do few. And then other pending provinces will be able to monitor the action set in case of what we discovered.
And in short, Honorable Julius, very quick can be made available. In terms of those that have been covered, I think the approach that we used was not to, the main deliverable for us was not the the report on citizen satisfaction. We are using the citizen satisfaction as a first step to say we want to assist and intervene. But before we intervene, let's find out what citizens are saying. So we found out what citizens are saying. Once we found out what they say, the issue then is to work with the departments to develop improvement plans and then address the gaps. So that later when you apply the instrument, hopefully the satisfaction levels can be up. But in terms of that first step of just checking what citizens are saying, that reports the level. Can you share if I could just ask Kenny Governor to speak to some of the discipline issues, blacklisting, and so on?
Thank you, Chair, Honorable Chairperson members. Let me start firstly with the issue around blacklisting and corrupt officials. I think as Clark has indicated, DPSA is not responsible for local government at this stage. But I think it's an area we've identified and it's an area we will have to take forward as part of the Public Administration Management Act and Information Sale. But in specific terms around the public service, as part of the amendments to the regulations, one of the areas we're looking at is preventing re-employment of public servants found guilty of corruption. So we want to put a restriction in terms of the period. You cannot be re-employed in public service. And that will be part of the vision of the regulation, so that will be out for comment very, very soon. I just want to indicate also this is an area that has been actively taken forward as part of the Anti-Corruption Task Force, which is a coordinating committee that brings together the National Prosecuting Authority, the SIU, DPSA, Justice, SAPS, DPCI. All of those institutions or departments involved in anti-corruption. And one of the areas listed on the work plan of the ACCG is the issue around blacklisting of both companies that involve corrupt practices as well as individuals participating in corrupt practices. We've also identified as part of ACTT and what we need to do is the issue around forensic reports. We've identified that particularly in the municipal environment, local government environment, there's a large number of municipal reports. And part of the problem is many of those municipal reports are written by officials within the organization themselves to cover up whatever deal that's there. So we need to find a way of ensuring that the forensic reports that are done by reputable people and that they are value in done. And action is taken based on the outcome of those municipal, based on those forensic reports. I'm aware that a number of those reports have already been given to the SIU and the National Prosecuting Authority to take forward. So work is underway in terms of addressing that, particularly in the local government context. And we will be monitoring. As you can indicate, one of the outcomes listed on the work plan of the ACTD is that 1,000 public servants are convicted for public corruption over the next period in 2019. So a great deal of emphasis is placed on it, and we will be looking at it. In relation to the danger zones, with your permission, just to the best of my knowledge, in relation to danger allowance, it's part of a collective agreement. The agreement was signed with that it would says the allowance will be 400 rands. And unfortunately or fortunately, from an employer perspective, maybe fortunately, we didn't attach it to an increase based on inflation. It's subject to regular negotiations. And Labour has not put that on the table. I know there's been a number of discussions about different categories of employees to benefit from the danger allowance rather than the increase to it. But I'm absolutely right. I think that's an area like the medical subsidies, which is the subject of collective bargaining this year, which is being adjusted linked on inflation over a period of time, to bring it in line with inflation adjustment. So the 400 rand danger allowance in Department of Police Services and other departments is a matter of collective bargaining, and I'm hoping that from the employee side, it will be put on the table very soon to be addressed. We will have to come back to the committee on the number of SMS members that are on precautionary suspension. I don't have the figures of that. And I think we will come back to the committee and give the actual figures in terms of SMS members on precautionary suspension. In relation to just the point the Deputy Minister has raised, and I fully agree with that, and I think it's something we need to just balance. I think we need to spend more resources in the strengthening of performance management and development in the public service. But the point that the Honourable Member is raising is also very important. And I think in the interim, until we strengthen performance management, there shouldn't be any bonuses attached to performance management. So we should ensure that we continue training and facilitating, making sure that there is assessment that people are delivering what they're supposed to be delivering. But there shouldn't be performance bonuses there to it, and I think the balance of the two.
I was not saying you must be enjoying the fight out, but also the community. My question was saying, I would ask you to be reopening the task, because as I was expecting, as I was explaining, so I don't want them to be confused around it, because I got another experience with it. So you must just answer the question only, because everybody is in touch with this information.
Let me get a request. In case you had a follow-up on our members, afford the department to respond and be afforded a follow-up. Otherwise, it's going to get up to a stage where it will end up in the dialogue. Please. Honorable, did you
Thanks, Vietnam. My apologies. Let me stop at that point.
If Chairperson, Honorable Chair, I could just speak to three other issues. Two of them were raised by the Honorable. The one is on the government employees out of here. When the resolution was signed in 2012, it was to get agreement with organized labor that we were going to go the route of a government employee housing scheme. What has happened as far has been the development of the key pillars and policy principles around the scheme. So part of the current process that we will hopefully conclude this week in our negotiations was to present those to organized labor. Can we agree that implementation of the scheme will take place along these parameters? These are the key pillars in terms of which the scheme will work. These are the principles that will guide how it's going to work, and so on and so on. So there was detailed work that was done, but it had to go through this process first. So once we can then get agreement around those, we are confident that we can go into implementation of the scheme. In fact, where we are at the moment, we've already had discussions with partners that can assist us in the implementation of the scheme. We already have drafted memorandum of agreement with partners that we've identified and will help us with the implementation of the scheme. So the big thing now would be to make sure that we reach agreement on the parameters of the scheme, the pillars, the principles, and so on. If that happens, then we can then go to work. So it's not only going to be continued development, because the development work has been done to the point where we are at the stage of entering into agreements, memorandum of agreements with the implementation partner. But that has to be guided by what happens in the PSDC over the next few days on us reaching agreement on the implementation modalities. I think on the issue of OSD,
why didn't you include it in your performance plan this year? They are lucky.
Yes.
Because if you raised it last year, you highlighted all challenges through the situational analysis, but this one, which has been a call for concern, you never included it. The question is, why is it not included and why he delayed?
So I think in this one, the project that we had, and I think it's just the process that we went through when we were analyzing the strategic plan, because the approach has been on any normal year, there are many things that the department does. And this is the advice from the AG. Don't include every single thing that you do in the first plan. Some of the things get included in the work plans of respective branches and officials. But don't take all of them and try to use the first plan. The first plan, which is the criticism we got in the past from the AG, that it ends up having a long list of many things.
Then you'll be tempted to ask you, how do you qualify that this one is better than this one when you do that?
Yes, but I think maybe on this particular one, because I was trying to explain that we have a project which looks at the management of the wage bill in a developmental stage. It looks at the range of issues with the OECD being part of it. It was not focused on OECD in particular, but it looks at the management of the wage bill broadly in a developmental stage, which is the issue that has been raised with us. So that's why I was asking that perhaps we can come back to the committee on this one, that we can then be able to pull out the data that comes specific to OSDs that we can then present to the committee. But it's part of that project on the management of OSD in a developmental state that the committee is working on. Yeah. And then the difficult one is by the Honorable on the wage negotiation. Now, Honorable Chair, I'm not going to be able to be very specific here, because there is a process that is being run by conciliators in the public service coordinating bargaining chamber. So there are a lot of specifics that are still subject to that conciliation process. What I can say is that broadly in terms of progress, when this process started, labor demanded a 16% cost of living adjustment. They demanded an increase of the housing allowance from 900 rands to 3,000 rands. They demanded a few other things, including the medical aid subsidy and an increase in number of categories of people who get danger allowance, number of leave days on this, based on paternity leave, and so on and so on. That's when the process started, last year in September. And then of course it is known that the employer started with a cost of living adjustment of about 4.8%, and a lot of things happened in between, including marches and deadlocks and appointment of conciliators. Where we are at the moment, with the assistance of the conciliators, the gap between the employer and organized labor has been reduced. Through various processes where labor then makes further proposals to reduce the what they are demanding, and the employer looking at what amendments can be made to the offer that is on the table. We met last week on Friday again through a facilitated process, where we presented our response to the revised demands of organized labor. And then the organized labor said, well, let's take away your response for further consultation during the course of this week. And then we will then let the conciliators know during the course of this week, and we can come back and meet later this week in council to hear the response of organized labor. But with your permission, Chair, just to respect the sensitivity of the process where it is at the moment, I would appeal that I not mention the specifics of what is on the table at the moment. Thank you.
Maybe upon another question, the question was specific to you, and those that attempted to respond to you was to relate a scenario. We had an oversight visit in one of the municipalities, and the report that we got was that a certain PFO was supposed to be charged, and he decided to retire. So the question was to say, what is it that can be done to help that? And I think you spoke about regulation. I just want to emphasize that if you go to Section 32, Subsection 5 of the MFMA, it's very clear. If there's any act of misconduct that relates to unauthorized, fruitless, wasteful expenditure, when the municipality decides to write off that particular amount as a result of media budget adjustment as outlined in terms of Section 29 of MFMA, the Act is very clear. That doesn't make it an excuse for criminal measures to be taken. And if you go to Section 32, Subsection 6 of it, it is saying even the accounting officer has got an obligation to go to South African Police Services to open a case. It doesn't only end up there, it goes further to say the municipality. In a case where the case is alleged against the accounting officer, then the municipal council has got an obligation to go further and open a case. So in this regard, there's no vacuum in terms of the pieces of legislation. Can I then add that we have the last round of questions? We are going to afford Honorable Kobejani, then Newan. These are the
then Honorable Junior. These are the only three hands that you got that will be put in question.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I thought, Chair, because we have never met with the department since the departure of the late Minister Chabane, it would be appropriate for us as a committee to pass our condolences to the department in that event. And thank you, DG, for the sterling presentation of presented to us. Despite the fact that you acknowledged that you sent to us in a short space of time and you wanted us to go through the marathon to an extent that not even our research unit chair helped us to analyze and do proper work that would have been informed us better than where we are for now. But having that so, Chair, that, you know, I had a marathon of questions, but I guess I will have to defend them based on others that have been captured by other honorable members before myself. But the issue that I wanted to start with is the issue relating to Tuso centers. You have informed us that you have gone 56 countrywide and you are in charge of one at Maponya that is owned by yourself. Of the 56, I'm not sure who owns the hang of them. What law is governing them? Who's supposed to be responsible for, you know, the two zones? Because by nature, they intend to provide the necessary needy service to our communities, particularly relating to ICT. But you cannot leave them the way you are seeming to say they are not, you know, coordinated. They are not, you know, responded by one portfolio department that will fully take responsibility of the two zones. I would love you to come very clear as to what is, you know, the immediate plan that within a reasonable time we will see them closing the, you know, the irresponsible behavior of government, which if I were to call it that, it's an irresponsible, it does not have an entity that we are unable to come here and say this is the department responsible for it, this is the law that we have said will govern it, and it gets managed by this particular person. Chair, on issues relating to disclosure on program 6, I'm sure, governance and international relations, I'm still, you know, wondering, Chair, why is it difficult for, you know, the department to account for senior management that have not disclosed their interest? What is that that makes your government unable to deal with these people, because that the disclosure is in terms of the law. It's not, you know, about whether you like it or not. Why is it difficult for them to deal with them? Because failure to do with that, it will continue perpetually, you know, until the end of life, if life will come to an end. Not necessarily referring to individuals, but holistically, all of us, on a generic, you know, level. I would want to get, what is that that is difficult? Just to say, you have got this team of your people, which is, if you call so, the team of managers in other departments, as you manage them by law, what is that that makes you difficult to come and say, you haven't, and we are charging you in terms of this law? How many have not, you know, by the end of the financial year that we have just moved out of, who you have dealt with them in terms of that particular law? Because if you have failed previously and then you see nothing wrong, you will continue, you know, having the same challenge, because people are can learn and see that you don't know what you are doing, and they will continue doing that and violate that particular piece of law. Areas that you mentioned to be targets not achieved, I don't want to talk to the area that I discussed with you outside the meeting. You will not repeat it as such, make mention of that. But my concern here, Chair, is about what we normally call samsaki. The department is masterminding samsaki. They just sit in this, you know, room by themselves in a workshop. That's not. We will make sure that we will do 1, 2, 3. They've never put an assessment, evaluation, and said we will be able to. And at the end of the day, they haven't done that. And they would want us to just say, I know, our department and the telecom is doing well. You're not doing well. You don't have to sometimes. You have to commit yourself on things that you come back and account on them. Don't just say, no, we haven't started. This is the delay of some other fellows who couldn't provide information. I don't think that's the way it works. We need to make sure that when we put targets, this target should have been properly thought of to say, by this particular time, would have been, you know, delivered an account at the end of the day. But to come here and just say, oh, yeah, Maspa no more,
department M I think Jordan Narto hold here mela John David. You must be sure of what you are putting as targets. So at the end of the day you talk to your tenants, you don't just say this are or what are you doing or not. Again, Chair, I would love to talk to issues that have raised them in slide number 36. And I'm sure also in the last slide. Finally, I hear a tendency that emerged that the department, as a DG account, the department accounted by the DG and the executive authority somewhere will come in. We are talking about the department. They cannot come here and say, we're waiting for the minister to... When they arrive here, the minister and themselves is one. They must account for one solid responsibility of the department. I don't understand why they say the minister will give us a day. It's a collective responsibility. When you account, because there will not be a moment where we say administration account next week now was calling the minister. They are one solid, they must find a way of creating synergy among themselves, and when they account on one responsibility together from the ministry to the last level of the minister, if it means the administration, you cannot separate the two. I'm not yet convinced whether is it necessary for us to have this kind of separation. Almost towards conclusion, Chair, it's about the African peer review mechanism. How often are you supposed to account for your peer groups? And are you compliant? Because I've heard you say you have just informed them that now you are in a better position to account. But I wonder, do you account as and when you wish, or is there any standing policy to say in a particular time you have to account and so on and so on? The 13 million here allocated for consulting. I'm still going to be very, interested to hear from them here. If you run the department having a position that was supposed to be occupied by Boise, Alina Boise or Mo Hunter, why are you not having the very same indoor expertise that you are going out and outsource outside? Why don't you build the indoor, expertise? Because this thing of consultancy, in a way, the departments are saying you have got a person employed to do a particular way. This person monthly gets a salary. But again, we are allocating another money for somebody to do the work of the very same particular person. Why are we doing that? Well, this is too much. 30.9 for just saying zero or resort allocation. So far, to every month. Why don't you deal with them? Why don't you build their capacity? If Bashaila will prove we can't afford to pay double salary, because this is a double salary. We are paying you here every month, 2015 we are over. But I would record when you come to the American. And then we think this is normal. It's not. It cannot be correct for us to sit here and say, I continue as it is. And I think this couple chair with the last question of saying, the vacancy, implications that the vacancy and failure to discipline people that are supposed to be disciplined and close the cases, related as well, because the reason why we've got a lot of 18 chairs is because somebody who all are struggling. So, what impact is this thing of failure to conclude disciplinary cases impact on the vacancy rates that we are talking about? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable One.
In page 30, page 30, in the National Development Plan, chapter 30, page 30. My question is, in those documents, I'm interested What issues that are put in place in this low staff morale? And how far has the image intervention the poor organizational design? In the overview 2014-15 performance page, I'm very impressed by the training of 758. My question now has been trained. Have they started? How many cases of investigation that have been done? I don't want them. It's deep. In my question, Chairperson, when I was asking about this, we are coming from constituencies, and the public sectors are there in the lower rate. They were reporting that the government is going for hot in terms of this negotiation. But what I can say, Chairperson, the department must see to it that these matches are destroying the image of the public sector itself. In their negotiations, they must close the ranks. That's what I can say.
Dear Madam Chair, the I remember the ITC checking, get an email of the report, the citizen's report card. Because we need to just to check the ITC itself on the report. We are working on that, you know, public services. But my question basically was, are there any report cards now? I don't want the report to say we are there or we are there. We need the report cards. Are there any report cards yet? Yes, Doctor. The other one is, I'm happy with the precautionary suspension issue. I asked for the reasons of the delay of submission of improvement claims. Not how far you are with the improvement plans. So that you mentioned that other departments did not submit. So my question was basically, what are the reasons that they did not submit it? Then, yeah, I heard you, Mr. Commander, I didn't get the name fully, sorry for that. I heard you mentioning about the anti-corruption forum, or the intention thereof, and so the NPA is not part of it, I suppose. It is. Let me stop. I don't want to sound controversial. Thank you.
Last question. Part of your developmental objectives is to ensure that you create capable, efficient, effective, responsive, and accountable public service. With a budget cut of almost 190 million, what impact will it have to effective, responsive and accountable public service? Two, the vacancy that you spoke about, with an amount unspent on the budget of almost 13.4 million as a result of vacancy that are not filled. Why do you have people that are accessing 18 allowance, I suppose? And the reason put forth is that there's insufficient delegation. Can you elaborate further on that particular note?
DG went further to outline programs that would be informing your strategic plan for this financial year. But what is more worrying, in program one, you are able to specify timelines. But with other programs, you are unable to specify timelines. I just want to get valid reasons. Why are you not putting timelines? Why are you putting inconsistency in terms of timelines, especially where we are saying as a state committee, we have an obligation of doing oversight. I just want to get light on those two or three questions that I have posed.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. just to appreciate the questions and comments that have been received, the honorable for storage, and some of them are advice that will embrace the department to improve on what we are doing. But here and there, just to clarify, the Tucson Service Center, actually the 56 was referring more to the one on the ones where we focus on connectivity, but the total number is more than that in the country. I think it's about 100, more than 170 Tucson centers. But when they were established, the program of Tucson centers started through a process coordinated by TCN. They were called multi-purpose community centers, and their main focus was the provision of information to communities, so that you can go there and you have access to information on government, the programs of government. But they have evolved over the years to actually now become centers of service delivery, where you can have one-stop centers for service delivery. So I think in terms of the original process, it was GPS. Now, discussions between ourselves and GPS, GPS has said to us that these centers are no longer just about information. They're about service delivery, and that's where you come in. And that's why we are part of that process between ourselves and GCIS, where we are focusing on this tightening up of the model, so that they don't just now fall under GCIS as information provision units, but as service delivery units. So it's not like at the moment we don't have a hold on them. That arrangement still exists, but we're just saying that it can be done better, because as them being left as information units, the management arrangements at local level end up differing. And that's exactly what we're trying to address here. Yes, the Mabonyamo is the only one we are managing, but that is because we wanted to do a pilot of a Tucson center in an urban environment. So you go to shopping mall and you have a Tucson center, but how can it work? So these lessons that we have from the Mwakonyamo will actually become very instrumental in the governance model that will be proposing. The Honorable Tobajang story is the issue about SMS members. In fact, we know who is not disclosed. Because in terms of the current system, you either disclose manually or you disclose online through the e-disclosure system. Those disclosures are kept by department, signed off by the executive authority, submitted to the Public Service Commission for filing. If you can ask the Public Service Commission, they can use statistics across the public service to say, in this department, this is the total number of SMS members, this is the percentage of SMS members who have not disclosed. So that information is there. In fact, one of the things they also do is that when you submit, and maybe you submit, say, 85% of the disclosure, they then write to you and say, what happened to the 15%, and what are you going to do about it? So it's something they could also advise the committee on, to say, what are the kinds of things. What I've seen is that you have people who say, when I was new in the public service, I didn't mean in a bad way. It's an honest oversight. I'm not hiding anything. Here's my disclosure. You can check it. It's just that it's late. And then they will say, okay, we issue you a written warning to say, next time, don't do it. There are other instances where people will say, I did not disclose company A, because I resigned a long time ago from that company. But the record of the company register still reflects the resignation has not been updated. So you have people who say, no, but that is part of the reason. Of course, there will be those areas where there is a reason to be worried, but the disclosure has not happened. So I think that kind of follow-up can be done to ask. Let's put aside where there was an honest oversight and so on. Let's deal with those where they are concerned. Why this disclosure was not being done? What was done by each department? And I think that kind of consolidation of the information can be done in conjunction with the Public Service Commission, because they collect all of that.
I'm not sure if I understood the context that has been put forward by Honorable Treasurer. Emphasis was, why is it difficult? Maybe the question was saying, consequence for failure to appear.
I think the issue is that I think in terms of what are the consequences that departments are imposing on those senior managers. think that is what can be provided. Because departments are asked, what have you done? And you'll find various reports where they say, we've done the flooding on this member of the public of the SMS. So I think the specifics of what has been done per department, that is the information that can be put together in collaboration with the Public Service Commission. So they have all that kind of information. I've noted the concern raised by the Honourable Tolena around the how we report on targets not achieved. I think those that we say have been achieved, I can assure the community that it's not a thumbs up because they get audited. So you can get the assurance that the process has gone through. At the moment, that's why when I started, I said unaudited because the auditor general is still busy. But they've been audited by our internal audit unit. But at the later stage, by the time they are in the annual report that gets tabled in Parliament, they will have been audited by the auditor general. So you can rest assured that this is something that has been verified. But I think the advice on how we report on them, especially as we capture them as targets going ahead, is what taken. And also the comment made about us accounting as one, the executive authority and the department. On the African peer review mechanism, the way it's done is that once a country has said we want to be part, you then also want to be addressed by our team in the country. You set aside the budget, they put together a panel of eminent persons from our country, they send them into your country. Then they evaluate you. They produce a report and they say you're doing well in this area, these are the areas where you have weaknesses. You must then develop an action plan to address those weaknesses and then report periodically to your peers what progress you are making. From our side, we've done all this. We got assessed, we got a plan that was developed, we submitted all the reports that they wanted us to report. That's why at this stage, it's not about that anymore. They're saying, but South Africa, isn't it time that you take the lead again and get reviewed for the second time? By the way, there are still a number of other countries which have not even been reviewed for the first time. But I think we are one of the few from the first group that got evaluated where now questions have been straight. Well, let's take the lead here as South Africa. So the issue is it has financial implications. And they also look at what is happening in the country because they don't want to assess, for example, certain heroes where there are elections, those kinds of things. But the president has said to them, we are prepared to undergo a second evaluation. But we will assess our state of readiness, the resource implications, and then we'll come back to you. So I think accounting to our peers, that has been done, and it's done very well thus far. But it's just going on to the next round of evaluation that the issue is being raised. Maybe we can discuss the issue of consultants in future. I think the challenge with the budget and consultants is that it includes a number of things. Some of them are regulatory requirements. For example, audit committee. The members of our audit committee, we pay them, but their payment is not part of compensation of employees classified under consulting. So we are required to pay them. We are utilizing CETA processes as a requirement. And the payments that we then make to CETA, we classify them under that area. So in a number of these places and the CFO is reminding me that also the money we pay to the H is the regulator fund. It falls under them. But I think other than those regulatory requirements, the honorable to be there, right, there are other areas where it is that we require. But I think what we do from our side, we make an assessment and we say, if for example we need a team of people to do HRC accessibility study. For argument's sake here, I'm just illustrating. We can spend 300,000 rand to get a team of experts who bring with them all the skills that are required for this study. Because the study gets done, and you're not doing it every day, you're not doing it every month. So once it's done, then you use it for purposes of policy. So maybe in that case, you don't want to employ the people in the public service. Firstly, because it's going to be very costly to do that. But secondly, you're not going to need them on a full-time basis. So there is that other part. That's why we try to keep it as limited as possible to make sure that we don't employ a DFO who then does not do his job and then employ a consultant to generate financial data.
for example, once we have CFO, who's supposed to be doing that? It's not in that area of work that we do. But I think it is something that we can discuss going forward, even the one on the link between vacancies and the failure to complete scenario cases. And just finally on 2 points, the Honourable one raised the issue of how we improve organizational design. They focus on our work, where we work with departments of organizational design. In fact, it's a regulatory requirement that before a department says, this is an organizational establishment, they must come to DPSA for comparison from our minister. And we have a team in the department that will go through the structure, the design, and they will say, no, we don't think our minister should come here as yet, because it doesn't satisfy the design principles that the department is aware of. And that also relates to the issue of staff morale. There's a lot of work on our employee wellness area that we focus on. And of course, we do believe that these negotiations as well, what employees are going to get, is part of encouraging the public servants to have a high staff morale. If the Honourable Manakolo was right around housing, we're trying to find alternative ways in which we can promote housing, home ownership among public servants. And then also agree with the Honourable Julius, in those studies, areas where we produce citizen cuts, the record cuts, they are there. But we focus on example that information can be provided. We try in that assessment on the cuts that we've experienced and to try to work differently. We're trying to make sure that we use different approaches to. That's why if you look at, for example, the work on discipline management, and there was a thinking in the past that we can have a budget and we can create a pool ourselves in position. We realize we can't. Let's make use of the resources that are there in the country so that we can still have the impact. So what the cards are doing is basically pushing us to think differently about how we should be doing our work. What we were saying on the delegation if you look at the Public Service Act, it takes all the HR power and given to the executive authority. Now, if the executive authority doesn't delegate, it means when you must appoint a secretary, you must go to the executive authority to get approval. It means every little thing that has to be done on HR, you have to go to the executive authority. And that impact on the feeling of it. Because if all the posts in the department, you have to go to the executive authority to get approval, it leaves the speed with which the things can be made. So the way that we have done on delegation template is we have said, we advise that you delegate as follows, as a principle in the public place. So look at the template so that you don't start wondering how do I set delegations. We have done it. Look at this and customize it to your area of work. So that then the concerns that we have about poor delegation impacting negatively on the functioning of departments can be addressed. I think on the one on targets, Chatterson, we have noted that the way we had done it was that in the letter booklet, we had taken the targets across all programs and split them according to what. But I think in the PowerPoint presentation, we just lumped them as annual targets, but the concern that Chatterson has raised is well taken, because I think you're right that in the program one, we specify them, and in a number of those in program one, they are all strictly required. But when it comes to the rest of the program, we just left them a totally milestone in the document, but not necessarily in the presentation themselves. But the concern that the person is raising is well taken for purposes of future presentation.
Lastly, before we afford allowing the mandate to do a vote of thanks on behalf of the committee, our country has very sporadic, violent protest marches. As the department, in particular, having a direct interest on issues of service delivery, what is your plan to assist the country from these sporadic, violent protest marches?
There are two aspects to this chapter. The one is around our ongoing work on service delivery improvements. Because in the work that we do,
we encourage a participatory approach between departments and service providers and service people, so that if there are concerns, that those concerns can be raised earlier. So that's why even when we talk about development of service standards, we say you don't sit in an office of service standards. Go out there and say to communities. In fact, if you look at the result of MPEX, that the PME plan, even as a service delivery improvement plan might be good, solid, and you implement it, there is a requirement that will actually say, but if you consult on the standards and the plan. If you did, then you get a negative rating. So as part of our work under the revitalization of Batubini, that's what we consistently say to them, that talk to communities. Make sure that if you're planning for service delivery, you talk to them. Make sure that if there are challenges through the complaints and compliment management framework, which we have developed at the national level and the special department, customize it. You can identify these problems earlier, and then you are able to address it. But that is the one part. But the other part is the work that is within the application. Because during the area assessment, a concern was raised by the evaluators about the potential for what they called at the time the four big risks in the country. They said, as part of your ongoing dialogue in the country and your national plan of implementation, make sure that the dialogue in the country stands for. So what we are doing from our own perspective as a public service, we put this on the table in all the work that we do around engagement with the risk department to make sure that do not do this work on your own. Because at the end of the day, you will think that you're delivering good risks, but people on the other hand, they are unhappy. That's why we have these tools around how you plan, to consult on the standard, how you manage complaints and compliments, you put it somewhere on the table, and the citizen satisfaction service to hear what the citizens are saying. Because it's through this kind of process where you then don't have government going this way and members of it, or public going the other way. So that is by and large the approach that we are using at the moment, through encouraging departments and guiding departments to work differently in delivering the services that they provide.
Maybe a framework must be developed that will be easily monitored, honestly speaking, because it's now become this priority. But nonetheless, thank you very much for the presentation. A round of applause for the government. It has been a very long and hectic day, but it has been fruitful. Honorable Zimand, on behalf of the committee,
thank you, Chair. as our partners in building a capable state that is responsive to the needs, one of the principles we like to keep in the committee is to make sure that service delivery is in compliance with what the Constitution enjoins all of us to do, which is to be people-centered, to make sure that service delivery goes to perspective, gets given to our people in a manner that is dignity and full of purpose and useful. Otherwise, you can deliver services that are not useful and that has no value to our people as well by just designing programs that are irrelevant and not well effective to deal with the plight of our people. And we want to thank you for coming, and we hope that you'll be regular. You'll be regular. We last saw you when you brought the African Charter. And we hope also that African Charter will ask questions on it in terms of how, in the midst of everything that all do and you do, assist us to make sure that we stay focused in what we need to do. Thank you, Chair. The meeting went well, and the interactions were fruitful. We will engage on the debate very soon, and Makalakis won't give you honor of Makalakis. Honorable Chase will be ready for you. They're still in the PE hype for now. So you are safe. So thank you, Chair. And thank you, members, for your participation. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you very much. And I then have two announcements.
lunch has been prepared for all of you out there. But can I also ask PC to make an announcement for tomorrow's invite for honorable members?
Chairperson, on that one, may I ask my boss here, who is responsible for tomorrow's activities, to advise?
Okay. Chairperson, yes, tomorrow we are having a parish vote debate in the National Assembly. The debate starts at 3 o'clock, and then the invites are sent to members, because they've arranged some lunch for the members of the National Assembly just at the D8. So ministry extended invitation to the members of the House to join the National Assembly at